Good evening, Demon fans, and welcome back to the Demonland podcast. My name is Andy, and Melbourne's trip to Adelaide Oval turned into another gather-round nightmare against Essendon. After last week's thrilling win over the Suns, the Demons had a chance to go 4-1, celebrate Jake Melksham's 250th game, and keep the Stephen King juggernaut rolling. Instead, after building a 19-point lead, they were overrun as the Bombers kicked 13 of the last 15 goals. I'm still away and will be for the next week as well, but Bimman and George are all holding down the fort. Last week, in the intro to the podcast, I was flying high. I thought I'd finally silence the demon on my shoulder, the one that feeds on the negativity, the dread, and the disaster. But clearly that beast is still alive and well, because in the lead up to this game, I had that all too familiar sinking feeling that Melbourne were about to do the most Melbourne thing imaginable. Knock off a genuine premiership contender one week, then capitulate against the winless Bombers and gift them an end to their 17-game losing streak. Safe to say my MFCSS is still very much alive. Tonight, Bimman and George will break down how it all unravelled, why Melbourne had no answer once the game turned, and whether some of the old bad habits are starting to creep back in. Take it away, boys.
Good evening, Demon fans, and welcome to the Demonland podcast. My name is not Andy, as Bimman and me, George, are holding the fort while Andy is away. He's busy smelling the cherry blossoms in Japan. Bimman might only be with us for a short time tonight as he has to clean the windows on his house, or perhaps he'll be with us for longer so that he doesn't have to clean the windows. Welcome, Bimman, and give us a rundown on your window cleaning exploits and also what you thought about the game on the weekend.
G'day, George. Thanks for that intro. Thanks, Andy, as well. Hope you're enjoying your overseas trip. Yes, I did put on Demonland that yesterday was like my dream day of sports watching. I kicked off with doing my form guide, watched the Masters as live in the morning, then with the footy in the afternoon. My plan was to watch the replay of the footy, but I wasn't so enthused, I have to say, afterwards. And then the races during the day. And well, there was a big champ went down yesterday. Autumn Glow, Australia's best racehorse, a mare, Wonder Mare, had won 11 of her in a row, her undefeated, her first 11 races, and was in a Group 1 weight for age yesterday and got rolled. So I'm not quite saying we're the best footballing team in the country, but, well, we gave Essendon the opportunity to break their 17 streak of lost games. So, and the payoff was today that I promised my wife that I would clean her car, clean the windows and various other tasks, which I haven't quite started on yet. So thanks for the reminder, George. I will get onto them as soon as we've finished this podcast.
Excellent. Okay, we've managed to break Essendon 17-game losing drought. Your overall thoughts on the game?
I'll probably unpack a little bit in the sort of stats file, but, it was really, really frustrating, wasn't it? I mean, that was the first thing. And right from the get-go, you could feel something wasn't right in terms of our sort of approach and attitude. And in many ways, it sort of tapped directly into, for the last few years, games where, or the first five games of last season, you know, where we were just couldn't hit targets. We weren't pressing up on them. It was, super frustrating. I mean, I'm not overly sort of upset about the loss. Like, it would have been much better, obviously, to have a win. Credit must go to, the Bombers in terms of, I thought King had a poor day in the box. And I thought he was out-coached to a degree. We'll talk about it during the show. If you think that Melbourne is a sort of mid-table side, finals is what I said, wildcard round at the beginning of the season, it didn't change from last week, it didn't change this week. If you accept that's where we are, that sort of loss, if you're off, one team's off in AFL level now and the other team's on, particularly as it in terms of pressure and intensity, it's going to happen, isn't it?
Yeah, certainly does. like you, I thought the coaches let their game down really badly. They didn't react to, obviously, the possession game that Essendon were playing, although it appears that a few other teams are playing that sort of game style, certainly from this round, and we'll talk about why they might be doing that. But the fact that they didn't respond to it, and the other factor is when you're chasing tail, because the opposition is just kicking it around the ground, you do get very fatigued and very run down. But there was certainly a lack of effort across the whole lot, and the coach in his post-match interview spoke about lethargy and across the whole side, and they have to try and find out why that occurred. So it was obviously pretty apparent, not just to us, the fans, but those in the coach's box as well. So
the other thing, George, before we get that thing that you've talked about over the last two or three seasons, and you know, and also in the preparation for this season, in the preview, that's where for me the gap in our list is in that middle rung players, 23 to 27. If you look at Brisbane, they're really solid in that range of say 40 to 80 games. We've got our younger players and we've got our core senior players, which I pumped up last week in terms of who's our best players. And, you know, the problem of not having that core group of players in the sort of 40 to 80 to 90 to 100 games is that younger players, you know, struggle to come up every week. And we had a big week last week, the 250th game for T-Mac and Maxi, obviously. We worked our butts off in that last quarter. 6-day break and travel is always bad. To be fair, they also had 6-day break and travel. They'd play on the Sunday night, and we played the Sunday afternoon last weekend. So I'm not blaming that. And they've also got a raft of younger players too, and not so many players in that middle block. But that is one of the problems of having a developing list, isn't it? Is that your younger players do struggle to come up every week, and particularly as we'll unpack a little bit as we go forward. You know, the game plan that King wants to use, as I've talked about often enough, is very, very demanding aerobically, very demanding from a running perspective. And if you're not on, and the opposition is, particularly as I said before, from an intensity perspective, you'll get done. It doesn't matter who you come up against at this level. It felt like that right from the get-go. And, you know, the clangers and the mistakes, particularly in that first quarter, I had a completely different feeling to last week. I thought, I don't know about you at the ground last week, but I was really confident we'd win that game last week. And in the last quarter, I didn't have that confidence at all, even at the beginning. You know, I was hoping, obviously, at the beginning of the last quarter, but I didn't have any confidence that we would win, because they clearly had more zest and energy, and you know, whatever the reason was for our lethargy, the lethargy was evident, wasn't it? So
yeah, certainly was. So maybe the stats can show us something, so we'll kick across to you, Binman, for the stats file for this week.
Alrighty, so I'll just bring up the last week. You know, it was so many ways last week. You know, the beginning in the stats file pod, in the standalone stat file pod, I sort of opened up by the section about why we won or lost with, the key reason was we were the better sides than the Suns. And I think this week is the opposite is true. The Bombers were the better side on the day. I know that's obvious from the scoreboard and everything that went into it. I think the difference is I don't think the Suns were near their best. They were down key players and they definitely weren't at their best. So, but they were a lot closer to their best than we were to ours. But all credit, you know, must go to Essendon for the intensity and also, as we touched on, I think the coaching was really strong. This is a quote from the losing coach's box presser. At the end of the day, I just thought we got beaten around contest. I thought they were harder and tougher than us. I thought our midfield had their colours lowered as well. We were minus 23 in contested possessions, minus 9 in clearances. They kicked 8 goals from stoppages. Our pre-clearance pressure was 2.2, which is just laughable. If you can't win the ball and you can't put pressure on at the contest, all of a sudden your backs are under enormous pressure. End of story. Now, that wasn't this week's presser. That was last week. That was Hard Week talking about why they lost and why we won. And I raised that on that quote on the Stats File podcast, and I was thinking about it this week because it was exactly true of us this week as well. Like, we lost that game for the same reason that Hardwick said the Suns lost their game. So, you know, last week the stats reflected Hardwick's assessment. We were plus 11 for clearances, plus 22 for contested possessions, and we had 14 more inside 50s than the Sun. This week those stats are completely and utterly reversed. We had, you know, we were dominated in contested possessions. So we were down 27. What is it? So we were down minus 27 for contested possessions. We were minus 8 for total clearances and minus 2 for inside 50s. So at stoppage, we got our hands on the pill first. And so that was a real, I thought it was really interesting from the stats perspective. We led the first possessions by 5 across the game, yet struggled to make the most of that, losing total clearances by 8. So despite getting our first possession 5 more times, they won the clearance more times than us, but positive 8. So after quarter time, we got smashed in center clearances after dominating against the Suns last week. So it was really almost in many ways a reversal of last week's performance. All of the things that we did well last week, we did poorly this week, and they were the reasons we lost. We conceded after quarter times, we trailed center clearances 7-13. What a shellacking given. We got Maxi in rare form, our best player again. We conceded 3 center clearance goals from those center clearances. They were much more efficient. 31% of the times they went inside 50, they scored. We only scored a miserable 19% of the time we went inside 50. Leaving aside those numbers, so obviously, you know, the clearances, contested possessions, they smashed us in that. Last week I said that King deserved a lot of credit for the win. I thought he had an excellent coaching performance. He took away the one wood of the Suns, mainly their ability to transition, and by really getting up in players' grill by that frontal pressure, which was just completely absent yesterday. And again, the opposite was true. I think Scott gave King a really good lesson in coaching. King's obviously only, his 5th game of footy. I thought he was out-coached, in particular, the way that, as we talked about, their keepings off style. So we allowed them to have that. They had 109 more disposals than us, had a tick under 100 more uncontested possessions, 99 more under contested possessions, had 128 more uncontested marks. We really, really let them have them. And, you know, unlike what we were doing against the Suns, where we really pressed up on the handball receive, we weren't pressing up on all of those uncontested marks and, you know, lateral kicks and, you know, the way they use handball. I think they only had 60 metres gained by hand because they were more than prepared to go back by hand and go laterally and set up the ground and just wait for us. And we didn't respond tactically. Maybe, you know, the fatigue makes it difficult to do so, but we definitely didn't respond tactically. Wasn't helped, I don't think, by Salo was injured fairly early and he came back on. But I think he did. Do you remember if he, I don't think he played out the last quarter.
No, he only played 50% game time, I think, in the end.
50%. And then, look, you know, Melksham might as well have not played in terms of his impact. Yeah.
One possession to three-quarter time.
Yeah, and I was thinking about you, George, in terms of, you know, paying the piper a little bit on having the older players in the team because T-Mac struggled to come up from last week. Maxi's timeless. He was our highest rated player again. But which is funny, actually, his rating was amazing, but I just didn't feel he had the same impact. And perhaps that's because despite winning the hitouts, we were smashed in the middle. For me, like I talked about it on the Stats for File podcast last week, you know, that if you wanted to look at one thing and in footy, is pressure still king? I've watched all of the games, most of the games so far. And pressure, it's all about pressure. You know, if you don't have one in the pressure rating, you hear the coaches say 2, they actually mean, it's made 200 for TV because 2 sounds not TV sexy enough. But, you know, the pressure in that first quarter was non-existent. 159 to 161, 180s AFL average. We came out and ramped it up in the second quarter, 189 to 168 plus 21, but then fell away after halftime, 168 to 163, even though we're plus 5, it's still a massive drop off, 21 from that. they just, you know, and team pressure, I really think, is a good proxy for fatigue and effort and intensity. That last quarter, they was their strongest by a mile. So it was their strongest by 31. So 199, 200s considered elite, 180s AFL average. We were 171. They were 199 in that last quarter. We were minus 28 for pressure points in that last quarter. The match was equal, 171 overall, but that didn't tell the tale. And two things, normally the first quarter and the third quarter are the highest pressure ratings because you're fresh coming into the game and you get the halftime break, but that wasn't the case for us at all today. Our 159 in the first quarter was poor, and then our next poorest was the third quarter. So so the only quarter where our pressure was at an acceptable level was the second, and not surprisingly, that was the only quarter we had a positive post-clearance differential for equity points, where we plus 12 for equity points, that meaning the impact that you have with the ball, winning those balls. And that was something that the rest, you know, that was also not coincidentally the only quarter we outscored them. Interestingly, in that second quarter, despite being plus 12 for equity points, we still lost the contested possession by one that quarter. And we're also down on ball winning equity in that quarter in total as well. It shows that in that quarter with AFL, in the second quarter with AFL leveled intensity, we've got great scoreboard impact from our possessions when we won them post clearance, and that's what you know, that's what intensity and pressure brings. The second quarter was also by far our best quarter for ball use equity points. We were plus 9.7, and the equity points for player rating points aggregated up, and you can split them up in all different categories, and how you win the footy and how you use the footy are two big areas. So that was our best quarter for using how we use the ball in the scoreboard impact. It's measured by scoreboard impact, plus 9.7. Our next best was 3.6. But when our pressure fell away in the second half, theirs went way up in the last, plus 22, as I said, and our points from ball use completely collapsed. We were negative 3.4 differential, and then 13.4 and 13.9 in the last quarter, 13.4 in the third quarter. So they, you know, our ball use fell away. There's obviously a risk of confusing correlation and causation, but you know, I think it's reasonable to argue that our ball winning, or a team's ball winning, is largely dependent on our pressure, contest, and intensity. But that directly correlates with ability to use the ball. And I think the ball winning equity points is a really good measure of those aspects of the game. But if you don't win the ball, you don't apply that pressure, it also makes it more difficult to use the ball and get scoring from your use of the ball. So just finally, just really quickly, player ratings, Maxi Gawn, what a season. I think he's been in our top three in every game thus far. He was our number one player with 21.3 player rating points. Harry Sharp continues his renaissance as an AFL footballer. He was our second highest rated player, 16.4 for the match, consistent across all four quarters, although he fell away in the last. Really interestingly with Sharpie, his ball use equity points, so of his 16.4 points he got for this match, 10 of them were from how he used the ball. The next player on the was Cozzy, who was our third highest rated player. He had 9 of his 13.4 points were ball use. So Sharpie was more impactful with how he used the footy in terms of scoreboard impact yesterday than anyone on the ground, including Cozzy. And that was a fair drop away to the next one, which, would you believe, was Maxi at 7.2 for ball use. This surprised me. I don't know about you, George, but particularly at Reading Demonland, there was some criticism of Harvey Langford's game, but he was our fourth highest rated player, 11.4 across the game, 6.8 was his ball use, but only 3.1 for ball winning. Just on ball winnings, Maxi's ball winning points are nuts. 12.4 of his 21 points came from winning the footy. And Tommy Sparrow rounded out the top five. Looking at the bottom, I reckon this tells a bit of a tale. Our bottom five players were Caleb Windsor with only 1.7 points. Jai Cully gave him a pump up on Demonland this week, and he returned the favour with a pretty average game. He had 1.5. Harrison Petty, 0.4. And this is the interesting thing. Our three lowest rated players were our key forwards. Petty, Jake Melksham had negative 0.4, and Van Ruin, I was really disappointed in Roo's game. He had negative 2.7 for the game. So you know, that tells a tale, doesn't it, in terms of our forward line just not being functional, not taking contested marks. Of course, that's a lot to do with how poorly we move the ball and from the half back line in particular and our speed of ball movement. But a pretty average game on all levels statistically.
I suppose the only good thing out of it is it'll pump the Eston fans up and they'll think they're fantastic now. And hopefully they'll enter another long drought. Anyhow, let's go to a few of the questions from our listeners. First load that we've got is mainly around the young players. So bear with me for a little while because a couple of these questions are all along the same line. First one from GS_1905. He asks, haven't jumped into the podcast thread for a while, so apologies if this has been asked already, but I'm just a little worried about the development of our young brigade, Windsor, XL, Langford and Tholstrup in particular. Now, I know these kids are 2 to 3 year players and we must temper expectations, but aside from becoming obviously solid footballers, are any of these kids likely to be future stars of the competition? And if so, who is most likely to break into the top 20 AFL players in the future? Along the same lines, Demon Cat asks, my question is, what, if any, positional changes would you make in light of today's loss to Eston, particularly in regard to our younger players? I'm not sure Windsor will make it as a centre bounce attending midfielder and think he needs to develop into the best wingman he can. I also don't think we're doing Lindsay any favours playing him behind the ball. Langford looks a natural inside mid, but does he have the tank to go inside yet? Finally, What Say What asks, generally speaking, the perception is that young teams get tired as the season goes on and often drop off. The media narrative appears to have that as the story for us in 2026, but we're not actually young with a fair whack of experience at the top end and not much in the mid-range 25 to 30. So do you expect us to drop off in 2026? Do you think we should prioritise youth and getting games into the likes of Jefferson or Kent Field instead of focusing on building team cohesion with a side that we've had for the majority of 2026, which is winning games and playing exciting attacking football? This was written before yesterday. Of our senior cohort, who are out of contract at the end of this, Melcham, Plugger Mac, do you think they'll play on in 2027 and thus stop Milkshake's kids from crying? Bin Man, about our young brigade, what do you think we've got?
I mean, working backwards, I think probably I'd be surprised personally if T-Mac and Melksham went on last year. I watched that. It was actually really good. There's those long form, like half an hour long interviews with T-Mac and Melksham looking at videos through their career. Both were really fascinating, actually. If you're obviously a Demon fan, listening to this, a Demon fan, they're well worth checking out. He was asked that, of course, and he was non-committal, but I personally would be very surprised if either T-Mac or Melk went on next year.
And both are out of contract, and in both those interviews, they almost said that themselves. Yeah. That, you know, the 1 year contract, oh, we think this might be close to the, you know, they're obviously aware of the realities of a footballer's life. So, yeah.
Yeah. And look, as we've talked about heaps, is and as is just talked about in the media all the time about the game, you know, it's the AFL want this really fast game. You know, we were talking just before we started. I have to say that the rule changes and the tweaks this year have definitely added to the speed of the game. I found it really fascinating, George, watching some of the games this in gather round tactically. I know the weather's been poor in a lot of the games and so it's a bit tricky, but there's been a lot more holding up of the ball, like you suggested before, the way the Bombers basically played yesterday. And I think that's partly recognition is this kamikaze run style is, you know, is difficult to maintain week in, week out. And so I think that, you know, there was always going to be a pendulum swing back to lower scoring because one, teams don't like getting smashed. Two, it's just really, really taxing that game style. In terms of the, look, I really, really bullish about our young players. Look, I understand, you know, that younger players are going to be inconsistent. I think it's sort of, you know, it's not in the first question, GS1905 said, you know, he knows the kids are 2-3 year players and must temper expectations. That's spot on. Like, you watch Essendon yesterday. If you're an Essendon fan, you'd be up and about Caddy, but Caddy has been terrible this year. Like, I've watched the big chunk of the Essendon games. He's not been great. You know, younger players will struggle, particularly younger players in their second year. XL had he's in his second year. Langford's in his second year. You know, up until the last couple of games, Wins has been excellent this season. So is Langford. I mean, it was interesting seeing in those player, that's one of the reasons I really like the player rating stats, is I wouldn't have guessed that Langford would have been our fourth highest rated player. Now, it wasn't a huge rating, but his rating now, average was 8.8 or something coming to this game. It'd be now 9. That's pretty solid for his position. He'd be ahead of a bunch of senior players across the AFL playing that wing position. I haven't looked actually, but if you compare him to Dempsey, which is the role that Montagna reckons on first crack that he's got, that King's got Langford playing, that same running box to box running down the wing and being a marking target in up forward, I reckon he'd be probably not far off the rating points of Dempsey this year. And last week he kicks 2 goals pushing forward. So, you know, I think that we have to temper our expectations. I think, as you're pointed out, really. So I think all of those players, I'm not sure about Xavier Taylor. He's obviously a highly rated point, but of the players mentioned, Tolstrup, Langford, Xavier Lindsay, and Windsor, I think Windsor will be an A grader. I think Xavier Lindsay will be an A grader. And my tip on him is that I reckon he will be a captain in the Melbourne Footy Club eventually. And Langford will be an A grader. I'm not sure on Colt, but he's got the tools. So, you know, I think we do need to temper them. In terms of, you know, I think the thing about Windsor in the middle is we need his leg speed. Like, that's what you need from, you know, as you've talked about last year, we were so treacle slow when we won the ball, we couldn't get out of it. And we couldn't, you know, maybe it was well coached, but what you've talked about of Gorney hitting the ball out into space, we just couldn't get that going this week. Partly that need someone with the leg speed of a Windsor, and obviously Coz. So, you know, I think he will make it as in this modern style of thing in terms of mid. I like Lindsay at halfback flank. I know he cops a bit on Damonland, and there were some suggestions that he didn't go as hard as he might have a few times yesterday. I thought he went pretty hard mostly. I really like him behind the ball. Obviously, King does too. They've got him playing that halfback flank. You know, I think, to be honest, I don't know about you, I think we miss Bowie. We really miss him down back. Salo's leg speed is also slowed down a bit. So, you know, I think that in terms of do we expect us to drop off? What I expect is that we'll get weeks like this. We'll get weeks where we beat a side. I mean, we were, they were 4.20 to win this game against us. We were $1.24. I reckon that's the lowest we've started since maybe North Melbourne last year. It was the opposite last week against the Suns. They were raging favourites. We rolled them. Next week we come out and get rolled by a team that we're favourite to win. I think, so rather than us dropping off in 2026, I think what we'll see is week-to-week inconsistency in performance. So, you know, partly we'll get up against specific games. They'll have target games, and the key is the really good teams don't drop off, do they? The Brisbanes and the, you know, they can drop down a couple of levels and still, you know, the premiership teams beat Essendon yesterday. We're not a premiership team. So, as I said, if you accept that we're a middle-rung team, well, we're going to have games like that plenty more for the rest of the season where we're favourite to win and we lose. We're going to have plenty of games, I think, where we're way underdogs to win and we'll win. So, you know, I think the senior cohort, you know, I think your point that about Collingwood is starting to come to bear this year, isn't it? You're seeing the senior players, they're really struggling. You know, it is such a leg speed, such a critical thing. And, you know, T-Mac looked slow yesterday. I thought Lever was pretty good, actually. I thought he played well, played on quickly. But, you know, also Melksham looked slow across the ground. That, to me, was a bigger issue than our young players. What about you in terms of young players?
Yeah, I think we are still in a rebuild, and this is the first stage coming through. the fact that we're talking about four players in particular, that you need more than that to be a real challenging side in the future. Hopefully people like Matthews and Taylor come through as well. That's how we got to the premiership in 2021. You've got to build up a group of players over 3, 4, even 5 years. This is the first group coming through. We will definitely drop off towards the end of the season, courtesy of the AFL. Our first bye is round 16.
I was just about to say, that's so absurd. It is so absurd. If we were a genuine top four, they wouldn't have done it to us. It is ridiculous. It does my head in, George.
And the other thing, of course, we've got winter approaching, so the grounds will get heavier, and running or even the style of play that we're trying to implement is going to be affected like that. But the younger players, even 2 to 3 year players, will struggle in those conditions where it becomes more contested, more grind and grunt. So it's great that we've got 3 wins on the board already, but I think the reality is, as the season grinds on, you need those players. Who was it said, our group of players in that 25 to 30, you need those players in that 25 to 28 sort of range to be able to endure the vigours of AFL during the worst of the season. So, we've got some building blocks, but still a long way to go.
Just on our fading away, I totally agree. I mean, it's just ridiculous that round 16 to the bye. I mean, what sort of competition has, like, it's so inequitable. Hopefully we're pushing for the wild card or finals, right? So in two things, or teams will be pushing for two things: to not be in the wild card, so to finish top six, and then to, obviously, if they're 11th or around that mark, to get into the 6 to 10 range, the 7 to 10 to wild card. So for us to not have our bye to round 16 is so disadvantageous for that. It is unbelievable. It just infuriates me the way that AFL run the competition. But the positive, though, is that six of our last eight games, maybe it's five of our last eight games, we play in Melbourne. So we actually don't travel. We don't travel to Perth again. We go to Tassie, and we play Port Adelaide in Port Adelaide, and we play the Gold Coast. But apart from that, we don't do a hell of a lot of travel. Are we playing Alice Springs this year? I can't remember.
Yeah,
so we've got the Alice Springs game. So we've actually got a really good run. You know, if we are in contention for either the wild card round or the finals to finish top six, that would be a bit optimistic. But if we are, then we've got a good run. We don't travel in the last, I think our last four games at the G, I think it's something like five of the last six or something in Melbourne. So I think that's a real positive, both from fans, because we get to see games, and also in terms of, you know, travel is really taxing, I think, particularly on the younger players who're still developing their routines and professionalism. So I think that's a positive. But, definitely your point well made about younger players struggling near the end of the season. And that's what happened to Langford last year, didn't it? He really started to sort of run in concrete boots by the end of last season.
Okay, moving on to the next series of questions, this time around the forward line. Buck Naked asks, what does our best forward line look like based on facts, based on the best guess, and by the end of the year? And Bowser Power asks, what are the main differences with our forward line this year? I'll take the running with this. I'm not quite sure that we know what our best forward line is at the moment. Some of our players in the forward line have been disappointing. After an opening round where he performed very well, JVR seems to have gone back into his shell again of some sort. We're not getting much out of him. Sadly, I don't think Petty is a forward. We've been forced to move Petty forward, I think, by the circumstances, basically, of the injury to Kentfield. Petty trained the whole summer in the back line. He was obviously slated for that, and then come the first round, he's been up forward. The trouble with Petty is he's as we saw yesterday, great overhead contested mark in certain circumstances, but his kicking for goal is just awful, just awful.
Which is ironic because remember when he went up forward for the first time, he kicked six straight or something against the Tigers and everyone was saying his, you know, his John Coleman second coming.
Yeah, and especially when you get to that point in a game where you need a goal, when someone can't kick from 25, 30 metres out almost directly in front, it just kills the momentum. It kills the enthusiasm of everyone.
And just on that, George, there was one in the game where it was not 20, it was a 40, would have been a nice kick, but it was just the ones that you just got to kick them, and they did. Yep. They took the chances. They were, you know, lethal.
Yeah. The other thing that was really disappointing to me was in the forward line. Melcham was absolutely awful, quite frankly, one possession to three-quarter time. And going back to the statistics that Binman uses, he had 42 meters gained. JVR had 70 meters gained and Petty 95. So basically for each of those three players, it was either one or two kicks. That's all they contributed to the overall performance of the team. The other thing that I think is really telling is that Roberts from Essendon had 42 possessions playing off the half back line because they were just let run free because our forwards aren't applying any pressure up forward. It's just you just can't let teams do that these days. And unfortunately, when you've got players who won't chase or can't play chase, that's what happens to you, and we will get exposed again if those same players continue to play. You know, thank goodness for people like Harry Sharp, who was in and around all the time. And Langdon.
You know, and Sparrow has to be said. His running power has been terrific.
But it's the guys in the forward line who were the ones who should be doing the work in their area, and they simply weren't.
And up the ground. Like his King's model is the forward line pushing right up, and that's what we did against the Suns is every time a player was received handball for the Suns, had one of our players right up in their grill putting pressure on them, and it was really noticeable. And just on on JVR, is like – I've been bullish on him, but I was really disappointed in his game yesterday, and he seems to have a bad habit of running underneath the flight of the ball and getting underneath it. It does my head in. Bloody Peter Wright outmarked him about three times simply because he ran underneath the ball. So he's got to be better than that. He's got to, you know, as we've talked about over the last few years, marking the ball up forward isn't really the key indicator, is it? It's bringing the ball to ground.
Not anymore,
Their intercept marks, I forget what it was, I think it was plus 12 or something for intercept marks. It was just terrible.
Yeah. So what happens, hopefully, we'll talk about it later on, but hopefully Kent Fields available this week to sort of restore the order, and I think Petty's better suited down the back line. Yeah, we'll talk about that a little bit later.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, to be fair to the forward line, a lot depends. It's also speed of ball movement. It's like we've talked about, if you're getting it quickly inside 50, you're getting it to one-on-ones in this space. But nonetheless, there was some and also Mychek, you know, last week, if we're doing this podcast last week, if we did it together last week, we would have been talking about how Mychek, how clever he is, like the hack kick out of the center by Steele, that Mychek read the first and got to it, you know. But he was pretty appalling yesterday. He was pretty poor. And as I said in the stats file section, the bottom three players were our key forwards, bottom three rated players were our key forwards. And, you know, they get points for free in a way because you kick a goal and you get points in that player rating system. So probably told a tale, that's for sure.
It's interesting. A couple of weeks ago, I heard a story about Geelong's forwards where they have to donate 10 cents to a liar jar or something like that if they don't perform a tackle in the game, which is just sending a message that if you're a forward, you're expected to tackle again. And unfortunately, when you look across our forward line, tackles are a rarity more than anything else. But it's about the way the game's played these days. You've got to keep the ball in your forward line. You've got to apply the pressure when it's in there. The mids and the rest of the players and the sides have worked hard to get the ball up there, and you're not just there to try and kick goals. You're there to do some work.
Yeah, and you've got to bring it to Boulder Ground. And that's what I meant at the top when I was saying it was like literally the opposite of last week. Our last week's win, what I didn't say, was build on our intensity and pressure. We had better pressure rating than them and we were harder at it, more contested possessions, more clearances, and it was the opposite this week. And it's equally true. The importance of that, as you say, is equally important in forward line, even more so. I mean, I read somewhere that the forward half intercepts, we just could not score from our forward half. I think we had some 12 forward half intercepts in the first half or some such, and didn't score from them. And so part of that is that, you know, we're winning it in the front half, but then not trapping it in our forward line, or not, you know, that was the case yesterday. It wasn't the case against the Suns.
Okay. Next question is the big one that a lot of Demon fans will be asking. It's about being favourites going into game. So Roost at Far asks, what's the main change at the club, personnel or mindset? That means we simply don't lose games such as Saturday's comfortable win against Eston, or is it a combination of both? Da Vinci asks, we often seem to lose going in as favourites. Does this seem true? And if so, what can a coach do?
Look, I mean, I tend to think, and I assume King would think this as well, is that, and probably it's a note to myself as much as anything, but like this is a new group, a new coach, a new president, new CEO. In many ways, I think that King would be hoping that the past, you know, for instance, not playing well when we're favourites, you know, is a thing of the past. So, like, I'd be cautious to sort of connect a longer-term pattern with how we performed in this game. But there's no doubt that, you know, I guess that's probably still in there a little bit, like Essendon's defensive struggles, not so much yesterday, but, you know, their defensive struggles have crossed over different coaches, haven't they? So maybe there's a little bit of that aspect in a team. But, you know, I tend to think it sort of goes back to ups and downs, the natural ups and downs of having younger players in the team and a developing team. Did we come in, you know, maybe our intensity was not just physical yesterday. Maybe we weren't as sharp mentally as we should have been. Maybe, you know, it took us out of it last week. I tend to think in that second, I don't know about you, watching that second quarter, sometimes when it felt like, oh, good, now we've got our game rolling, we're going to come out after half time and we're going to impose ourselves. And watching the game, you know, like you, we've watched hundreds of games of footy. When you favour it, I feel like that's what the Suns did a little bit to us. I think there's a risk of when you start playing well and it feels like, oh, okay, normal transmissions resumed here, if you know what I mean. We got on top. We got out to, what, 3 goals out at one point?
Yeah.
For me, the game was almost lost in that period in the last 10 minutes of the second quarter. We took our foot off the accelerator, our intensity and pressure. That was our, as I said, that was our highest rated pressure. It was 198, they said on the television at the 15-minute mark, and they were saying that's the reason we got back into it and we're on top. And at that point, it looked all the world like we were autumn glow and we're going to kick away and win that game, no worries. And I wonder whether, particularly for a younger side that's not professional, or not hasn't got drilled in like Brisbane. Brisbane would have doubled down then and got out to a 5-goal lead and the game would have been done and dusted. But I reckon psychologically we took our foot off the accelerator, and once that happens and the other team gets a sniff, and we couldn't return it around again. We'd already turned it around once to get that 3-goal lead, and then they got back with what, 6 points at halftime? Yep. And that, for me, it was that point in time. They dominated the rest of that game. So I do wonder whether, you know, the long answer, I guess, but the psychological thing is we're just not used to winning yet. It's more so about, like, coming in as favourites. It's more about where, you know, we're not a professional unit that's well-drilled, that's been in this situation tons of time. Like, I watched the Swans yesterday against Gold Coast. And when they were pushed, when Suns were coming at them with the wind, and really, the Swans just flexed. Similarly, the Roos-Lions game, that was a sort of a bit of a nothing game, but the Roos pushed at one stage and the Lions just flexed. And I think so it's more to do with being a younger team that's, you know, not not having much experience of winning, really. The last 2 years we haven't won those games. So, I wouldn't worry about too much of it being favourites as such, more about, well, you know, that's something the unit, the team will learn as we grow as a team and become a genuine top four contending team, is in that circumstance, three goals up, impose yourself, get your own game plan up and running. You know, you kick away, kick two more goals, you get to 30 points. But I don't know, how did you feel that went yesterday in terms of us being favourite?
Yeah, I think people forget that while we've performed better than expected this year, we're a bottom four side last year, and so we're Essendon. Yeah, that's when you come into a game, as you said, sometimes the older, more experienced sides like Brisbane and Sydney, they flex their muscles, but the people who are flexing the muscles are the people like the Heaneys or the Zorkos.
Exactly, like Heaney. He just
just takes it by the throat. That's it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Game's over. Who's our equivalent? Probably Max.
Well, Cos and Max and Cos.
It
felt like we would have been in a world of pain if it wasn't for Cos in that game.
Oh, yeah, definitely. So, but you still need more of those sort of players, and you just can't depend on one or two, you know, like Brisbane and Sydney. It's not just Heaney, but also, you know, they've got a whole raft of players who will bob up the Berries, the, you know, the McCluggages come in, the, you know, the list just goes on and on of those type of players who just say, no, that's enough.
Yeah.
Now we'll start playing. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. So we lack those players, but that's part of what this journey is about.
Exactly.
We will get those players eventually. You know, in 2021, it was people like Salem who were able to go, no, that's it. I'm going to go and solve the problem here, or even a May. Those players aren't what they used to be, or not even here anymore.
Yeah, and I think the other factor, George, is that it's well worth noting is that part of that factor is we came in as raging favourites. So we're playing a team that's desperate to win a game of footy, like for a whole range of reasons. Like they're absolutely desperate to win the game of footy. So, you know, we're raging favourites. What are they going to do? They're going to do what Scott did. They're going to go to town on our game plan. They're going to do, you know, unpack it. They're going to say, well, what's Melbourne done successfully? Let's look at what we can do to mitigate their strengths and develop a game plan that's going to take away their strengths. You know, that's not going to happen when you go into a game against when you're not favourites. It's also not going to happen when you go into a game when you're equal favourites, for instance. So we play North Melbourne, you know, let's say we go into that game equal favourites. Both teams are going to try their own game plan. We're both trying to develop a game plan. But Essendon, in this circumstance, desperate for a win against a team that they were heavily favoured to lose against, you know, they went to town tactically on us. And this team, we've had our preseason inter-club games. We've had 1.5 practice games. You know, half of it was rained off or lightened off or whatever. And we've had 4 previous games where we've played our game plan, albeit with a tweak against the Suns. Ironically, we look to mitigate their strengths against the Suns. This is the first time this unit under King with this new game plan has been put in a position where an opposition coach and team has actively gone out to disrupt our game plan. And so it looked a little bit like on field that we struggled to adapt to that. I mean, we're not the hunted normally. So I think that's definitely a factor. And it's a great learning for the club. Though, you know, tactically, I thought they really got on top of us in that field. That uncontested possession, we had the obvious answer to is to press up, but maybe if we didn't have the legs, you can't do it. Maybe Essendon knew that or doubted that we'd have the legs, and whatever the case is that tactic worked, and we didn't really find a way to be able to find our way through it tactically.
No. I'm reminded of the game in 2000 where the Bulldogs beat the Essendon side that had won 20 games straight.
With that flooding thing.
It was just simply the same thing.
Yep.
Just deny the opposition getting the ball.
Yep.
Was
that Terry Wheeler?
Yeah. I can't. Yeah, I think it may have been.
Yeah, I remember that.
And would have been that.
Had a whole. Remember, there it sort of started this conversation about boring tactic, whatever. That was a more extreme. That's a really good example, more extreme than this one. But yeah, I mean, if you've got a way of playing and suddenly the opposition disrupts it for the very first time, you know, it's probably it's a good learning at the very least.
Yeah. Last question from our listeners around game fatigue. Sam6172 said, in Coach King's post-game, he mentioned fatigue and energy enough times to make me think they are leaning on that as far leaning on that as for the reason for a pretty lackluster effort. Even mentioned that there are a few young men who might be struggling with the demands of a full-time athlete. The question is, do you think we went to the well a few too many times with T-Mac? He looked miles off it today. We'll expand a little bit on this with fatigue. The AFL has changed a lot of the game rules with the lasso rule and ball ups around the ground, and players are keeping the ball in play a lot more than what they ever used to. But the result is that there's not the same number of breaks that are occurring, and players are getting fatigued enormously. The style of play that we're trying to implement really really affects the individuals, just because you're expected to run and then run back and run again. Binman will probably tell you about the running capabilities of Harry Sharp, for example, but while that's over a 2 kilometer time trial, the players are expected to do that 5 times in a game. It's not just Olympic athlete type standards where we're expecting them to run, but we're expecting them to do it again and again and again. It's really starting to affect individuals. The AFL hasn't woken up to it yet, but I looked through the injury list last week. So this is after 4 rounds. If you look at hamstring, leg, knee, and foot injuries, there are 91 players in the AFL who are off the list at the moment.
91.
If you just go for quads, hamstrings, and calves and Achilles, there's 38 players across the AFL aren't on the list. People are breaking down. Now, this is four games into the season. It's not these aren't injuries caused by collision. These injuries are being caused by running, effectively. So, if the AFL hasn't woken up to it yet, hopefully the Players Association will wake up to it. But while the style of play that we're seeing is really exciting for we as fans. The athletes who are being asked to perform it are really being affected badly. So the other end of the equation is for the older players, they're being seriously exposed, and I think we saw it in this game. So people like T-Mac who were holding down their positions reasonably well, when the ball moves quickly or is expected to run up the ground and trying to keep pace with a player like Ben King or last week, for example, they really struggle. Salem was struggling this week. Melcham was struggling beyond belief this week. A 6-day break for those players simply isn't enough anymore. So we've got a combination of rule changes, game style changes, and old age is catching up for a lot of players, and it's not just our team, but across the league as a whole.
Yeah, I can. All good points, well made, George. And I mean, I think that just credit Selwyn Griffith. I mentioned this on the last pod, Andy. You and I did the. We haven't been too bad. I think CJ's our only one with a soft tissue injury, I reckon, so far.
That's correct, yeah. Half.
So from that perspective, credit must go to the high-performance team in terms of, we haven't had that same rate of soft tissue. But how many did you say, hamstring or
68? Hamstrings, calves and quads and Achilles was 38.
That's unbelievable. That's just – and look, I mean, as we talked about before we started recording that – it's one of my things that I've been banging on for ages with the unintended consequences of rule changes the AFL did. I mean, I think in some ways rule changes have been really positive this year, but they're clearly trying to generate a higher scoring game, more goals, more ads. That's essentially the, more ads on free-to-air at least. That's what they want, because that's what they think people want, is a higher scoring. And, of course, it's exciting to see goals being scored, but the unintended consequence of that is, it's not only are you going to have an increase it just logically, if you're getting every single player in the team now runs more than 10 kilometers a game, you know, 25 years ago, maybe three did, I reckon, I'd be guessing, but there would be, you know, maybe in the 80s, Williams might have run 14, 15 kilometers. These are Williams.
Yeah. Robert Harvey.
Yeah, exactly. Like they'd be, you know, notable for that, you know, but a Ford wouldn't, you know, certainly a Majacek or a Roo wouldn't, you know, you'd be looking at Darren Bennett wouldn't have run much further than the 50 meter arc back in the day, even though he could
plug up, never got past the goal square.
Yeah, exactly. Or Dunstall as well. Like, yeah. So, you know, in terms of that unintended consequences, I think that's one, the injuries one, but two, it's, you know, I think it's the type of player that's going to be able to play elite AFL football moving forward is, you know, with the Tassie coming into the competition, how many elite footballers, that's the benchmark you've got to be just to get on the radar of an AFL team, but also being an elite athlete as well who could run like in a 6 minute, approximately 2 kilometer time trial. You know, you've got a diminishing pool of such players. So you're spot on in terms of the fatigue. And I think what we'll see is that despite what the AFL would love to see, that kamikaze back and forth style isn't sustainable in the long term. And you'll get lots more of yesterday's games, I think, where a team will look to chip it around. Maybe they've had three or four really hard running games in a row. They'll need to throttle it back for that fourth game and hold on to the ball because you're not, you know, using as much energy. You look at the way Collingwood are playing. Collingwood have gone backwards. It's hilarious because McRae really could be credited with bringing this high transition, high turnover game into footy. Like they won a flag doing it and were super exciting in the previous year. What was it, 22, when McRae came in? You know, but now they've gone back to a defensive style where they're really slow with their ball and deliberate and, you know, part because they don't have the cattle. They've got an older team as well. So, you know, I think it's really sort of that fatigue, you know, is all teams are going to struggle with it. The bye is going to be a big factor. I think that's it's scandalous that our bye is not to round 16. It's such a disadvantage. Who did we play? I think, who was it? Suns had a 17-day break into our game, which probably didn't help them mentally. But I think I'm right in saying that before we played Hawthorn, we'll have had two byes when we play them. Maybe I'm getting that confused. But the other thing, just in terms of, I've talked about this on the StatsVile pod, is for me, I've been for ages, last two or three seasons, trying to find data that helps me understand running power, sort of relative fitness within a game. The thing that, you know, I think the best proxy, as I've talked about a lot, is pressure. Pressure requires a lot of lot of fitness to be able to spread and cover. But the other sort of only publicly available data is the tracker data on the app, on the AFL.com app. If you go to the match centre, there's a tracker thing in it, and it looks at all sorts of different aspects, top five in a different categories. Last week against the Suns in the StatsVile pod, as evidence of how hard we worked defensively, how strong our all-team defensive running was and our spread was, and also our athletic profile and the running power of our team when we're at our very best, we had the top five players for average speed and defense, which means when the opponent has the ball, not when it's in defense. So when the Suns had the ball, that we had the top five players on the ground for average speed in defense. That was Langdon, Langford, Colt, Sparrow and Laurie. This week, reflecting the opposite, reflecting how poor our old team defense was and whether this is fatigue or psychological or not responding to their tactics, you know, reflecting how poor our spread was in our old team gut running, whilst we had the five fastest average speed when they had the ball in attack, that is, so running ahead of the ball, like Latrell getting ahead being an option, we had the top five in that, no worries at all. The top five players on the ground for average speed in defense when the opponents had the ball were all bombers. So last week we had the top five players for average speed in defense when the Suns had the ball. This week the opposite was true, and the Bombers had the top five players when we had the ball, which means they worked harder than us defensively. They spread harder than us defensively. Our spread was miles and miles off. So it was really evident fatigue is going to be a buzzword by the middle of the season. Watch out for it. Fatigue will be the new loading, George.
Okay. Same thing, isn't it?
Well, they're no,
they're tied.
No, no, their functions are one another, but yeah, they're not the same thing.
Okay, thank you to all our listeners for the questions that you've sent in. We'll be trying the same sort of thing next week, so keep us on your page. Next week we have a game on Sunday afternoon, unusually for this season, against Brisbane. Yeah, we better get used to that because there's plenty of those coming up against Brisbane. So thoughts on that, Bin Man, and probably the ins and outs as well that you suspect.
Look, I haven't had time to really sort of drill down on Brisbane sort of from a numbers perspective. I'm still going to do a, as much as I'm not particularly keen just because I've started doing them. I'm not so keen because that's such a terrible game, but I will do a standalone stats file pod. And in that I'll do a bit more of a deep dive on the data for the Lions. I'll try and get that recorded tomorrow so it's up in a, on the it's published maybe on Tuesday, Wednesday, depending on when Andy can get to it. But the Lions are the benchmark, aren't they, George? I've read a lot of frustration about all of their father-son picks and the, you know, what are the other things that they get, the Northern
Academies,
all of that stuff. And I get that. I think they're totally justified. I don't know, maybe not justified criticism, but leaving that aside, just from a pure football perspective, I love watching them play. And, you know, I think having barracked for Melbourne for a long time, you know, we're often down the bottom of the ladder. There's always, like always has been all through the 50-odd years I've followed footy, there's always been a benchmark team, hasn't there? You know, it was the North Melbourne in the 70s and Hawks in the 70s and the 80s with Hawks as well. There's always a team that's the best, and the Lions in the early 2000s, and now the Lions again. I really love watching them play. They're a classic version of the you build a game plan around partly around philosophy, but also partly around your cattle. Is there, you know, now everyone sort of wake up to how they play, which is this funny combination of go fast when they need to go fast, but they move the ball really deliberately, which is what the Pies are trying to do, actually. They're trying to mimic that style of holding onto the footy but going forward with those little 20 to 30 metre kicks. And that's a huge feature of the way they play, much, much less overlapping handball. So number one in the AFL for metres gained by handball was the Suns before our game. It is now after that round. In this round, it's the Swans. They get like 450 metres gained, I think, more per game by hand, which is just incredible, really. I haven't looked, I meant to, but the Lions are nowhere near that. They play a different style where they use those 20 to 30 metre kicks and they're lethal with them. They just hit them and they look easy. AFL players should be able to do them, but we don't have that quality. You know, you talk about the Ashcroft brothers, the Fletcher, the, you know, they're just stacked. And I think the other thing, and why I think we really always struggle with them, and we've talked about this a lot over the last 2-3 years, is that, you know, I think that's what we need to move our game to, is the number of their mid-size utilities that kick goals is such a feature of the way they play football. And everyone, every other team is playing catch up on that front. Like, I know I always use him as the exemplar of this, but I just love him as a footballer, Bailey. He is exactly what I mean. He wins his own balls in midfielder. He can push back in defense and win the hard ball there. He can apply pressure up forward. And when he gets his chance to kick a goal, he kicks a goal. But, you know, I could equally Lohman and Fletcher and
McLuggage
and Berry and
McCarthy.
McCarthy, exactly. It's like this flotilla of bloody mid-size utility types who kick goal and they cut us to shreds each time. And I really hope Moniz Wakefield comes back in, because we need, you know, I think we're exposed a little bit with what's his name? Is it Clacko or the in the Bombers side, Kakko. Yeah, like that again, you know, we were killed on the ground ball gets inside our D50 and they cut us up, and it just reminded me of that need for that media, you know, particularly with Bowser not on the side. We need a player like AMW can win those ground ball gets. We need to find a way to mitigate their ability to slice us up by those kicks, and the only way to do that is to be fit enough to cover in the same way we'd want to do with handballs against the Sun. fit enough and strong enough and running power enough to get up in the grill of the player who is that lead up kick. And if we can't stop them marking the ball, stop them from moving the ball on quickly, because they keep up, they move that ball sort of up the ground until they get some space, then they go super quick. It's a huge challenge for us. It'll be really interesting to see how our game plan stacks up against theirs. I think each week it's better to look at each week in isolation. So I don't think this game will make us any less likely, for instance, to win next week, if that makes sense. I'm really looking forward to it. I love watching the Lions play, so I'm looking, I hate to say it, looking forward to watching them play. I think the ruck's always a big part of the equation, isn't it, where Maxi had a great performance against Wits, and, that went a long way for winning that game. And who's their ruck at the moment? What's his name?
Their ruck?
Yeah.
They've got two. They've got Draper and Fort.
Yeah, well, Fort, although I keep confusing him with that fella up forward, but Draper's a perfect in for them. He's strong, Fort's strong. And I've always thought, Maxi, the players that he struggles most against, maybe it's not quite so badly this year because he, with the change to the rules, is rucking opponents who are really physically strong, because they can match him at the boundary line. It'll be interested to see if they just let us play their game. And that's what I think, they will try to play their game. They won't try something tactically sort of to dull us outside the obvious things. So we should get at the game on our terms, at least in terms of the opportunity to get the game on our terms. And hopefully the weather, I don't know, have you checked the weather? I haven't seen what the weather
is. Too far away.
But we'll be, I haven't even looked at the odds. I assume that, so against the Suns, I think we're $1.30 to win. We're they were $1.30. We're $1.30 against Essendon or some such. And I reckon it'll be the same. The Lions will be about $1.20 to beat us, and that's probably not far off the right odds. So, but as we know, against the Suns, we rolled the Suns at those odds. Essendon rolled us at those odds, so no reason to think that we don't at least have a fighting chance against the Lions. A bit will depend on how the Lions recover from their game against the Roos. Both teams travel, so
What do you reckon? Same number of days, effectively. Brisbane are starting to flex their muscles like they did last year and the year before.
They started both seasons the same way, and it's around that fatigue. They peaked. Yeah. If you look at the footage, George, of them playing last year in the grand final, they looked, and then compare it to photos of them at the beginning of the finals, they look cut. They look physically even no body fat at all come grand final. They've timed their high performance program amazingly well the last two seasons. And
But the main thing and the main problem we're going to have is just the sheer depth of talent that they've got across every line on the ground.
It's phenomenal, isn't it?
It's what everybody aspires to. We just off the top of our heads named five or six players in their midfield who just contribute all the time every week, and you can stop one or two of them, but you don't stop the whole lot. It's across every line that they've got. Up forward, it's the same story. They've got Oscar Allen and Logan Morris, and then sitting at the bottom of their feet are Cam Rayner and Charlie Cameron. They're a premiership side for a very good reason, because they are the best in the competition. So it'll be a good benchmark for us in terms of ins and outs.
Just before ins and outs, George, the other thing that they've got on us, which is important, is their game plan is actually very straightforward in many ways. Mm. All game plans, I think, are becoming more straightforward, but they all know it instinctively.
Yeah.
They know exactly. It's so intuitive. And just like just before you go into ins and outs, but the players on every line, one of my favourite non-Melbourne players is, his name's Kitty Coleman. He cut out for a year with a ACL. He's taken a little while to come good. I watched about a quarter and a half of the game against North Melbourne, and he's just all class, playing off the halfback flank. He uses the ball like a dream. Left foot, kicks a goal from 45 metres, handball receive, and slots it without a thought. I just totally agree. I mean, that's partly why leaving aside the whole thing about the fairness of the draft and all of that, I mean, that's all a reasonable conversation, but geez, they're a magnificent football team just from a talent perspective.
Yeah. ins and outs, I think there is a very good reason to bring in Heath this week, and the reason is Draper and Fort, simply because both Draper and Fort drop into the forward line as well. That if Max is expected to run the whole game as prime ruck, firstly he's going to be challenged by two very physical players, but then the danger is that they'll drop Fort in the forward line or Draper into the forward line, and they will take marks like they did in their previous game. So I think he needs the backup that's there. Petty, I think, needs to go into the back line again. Can we afford T-Mac in the side anymore? I think with Petty going back, that means T-Mac isn't needed, and I think, unfortunately, T-Mac's starting to show his age, and he'll get exposed by Logan Morris and Oscar Allen as their forward. So we need our most capable, our younger brigade in terms of Petty going back there rather than the T-Mac. That, I think, opens the opportunity up forward for Kent Field, and I think we need to see him. Now, thank you, AFL, yet again. Our Casey side has played two games this season, in the last month.
About it's just, to mention that. It's a joke.
And it was absolutely ridiculous that they didn't have any VFL games this season so they could play some game over in
representative
South Australia.
Game.
Representative game in South Australia, completely meaningless, and as if anybody will go and watch a VFL game in South Australia while there's AFL games going on here, there and everywhere else. Yeah. I mean, they struggled to get what they get. They got 9,000 to Norwood to watch the Premiers play. they had 10,000 at the Barossa game. Why would you go and watch a VFL game? But thank you very much. So, yeah, we haven't had the opportunity, but hopefully Kent Field's available. I think he was the one who, in the pre-season and in the training sessions over summer, was playing up forward.
Yeah,
so,
I agree.
And so, so I think we'll see that. Salem appears to be out this week, so that creates another opportunity for someone to come in.
Well, hopefully, Manese Wakefield. Did you watch the game against the Hawks? The Casey game against the Hawks?
No.
Very entertaining game of footy, I have to say. Pretty high skilled as well. Heath, I don't think Heath will come in, but if they do, it will be on the back of a almost best on ground performance, including the winning mark, well, saving mark in the last 30 seconds. He was awesome. Kenfield kicked four and was terrific. The best of our forwards was Jeffo. He kicked four, could have kicked seven, presented really well. He was really impressive. Manese Wakefield wasn't as sort of bang the door down impressive as I would have hoped. But if Salem's out, I think he's a natural to come.
We have a need in the back line for a player exactly like that, yeah.
Yeah, and look, as I said, I was really disappointed in Roo's game. And this habit of running underneath the ball was just came back in full force. If they're going to bring Heath in, I reckon bring Heath in for Roo almost, because I think Kenfield will come in, and so Kenfield comes in. I think that there's a chance Jeffo could come in and swap out for Melksham.
That was the other one I was going to suggest. Melksham, unfortunately, is not providing anything to us up forward.
And we need running power, because that's exactly as you said. Yeah. So, just because Melksham is an older player, that's why I said on the Stats File podcast last year, I was wrong. I said in our podcast that I didn't think there was any chance of him being selected because he didn't look like he had the running power, and, he kicks four goals and was a match winner, arguably, against the Suns. But, it's a bit like real young players. Older players are going to struggle to back up sometimes, and that certainly was the case. We took Laurie out, who I mentioned before. He was top four. He was our fourth highest for average speed when the Suns had the ball. So we took him out. So excellent defensive, whatever he did sort of, with his kicks and all of that stuff. Excellent defensive spread and cover. We took him out and replaced him with Melksham, who's not covering the same sort of ground and critically not covering the same sort of ground at speed. So it's not just fitness, is it, anymore? It's ability to run quickly and run forward quickly, run back when you turn it over. So I could see Melksham coming out, Jefferson coming in. I could see Kenfield coming out. coming in as well. Definitely Petty's got to go back. I think there's, you know, T-Mac, the other thing about worries me about T-Mac is one-on-one is not great. Lever's not great one-on-one. You know, the best one-on-one defender we've got is Petty, so we need Petty back in defense. What was Salem's injury?
Ankle.
So, and that's the thought that he's going to miss games?
Well, he was out for half the game in this one. It certainly didn't look very good at all.
Yeah, it was a big factor. I mean, when you lose players on the bench.
Yep. All right. I think that's about all for this week. Thank you, Bin Man, for your assistance tonight. Hopefully Andy will add all the very nice bits from somewhere in Japan before and after.
Come home, Andy. Hopefully you watched this game. I didn't say what the result was, but when you listen to this, don't cry too much.
Thank you to all our contributors, GS1905, Demon Cat, What Say What, Buck Naked, Bowser Power, Roosted Far, D Vinci, and Sam6182. That's all we've got for this week.
That was B-Man and George with a breakdown of the D's disappointing loss to the Bombers. A big thank you to B-Man and George for holding down the fort while I'm away on holidays. They'll be back next week to dissect the match against the Lions of the G, and I will return the following week for the Anzac Eve match. See you then. Go Demons.
Go Red Leggers.
It's a grand old flag. It's a high-flying flag. It's an emblem for me and for you. Well, it's the emblem of the team. Team of the red and the blue. Well, every heart beats true for the red and the blue as we sing a song for you. Should old acquaintance be forgot, keep your eye on the red and the blue. Oh, where the team played fine in the year 39, where the team that no one can lick. Find us there after the final bell with the spirit of 1926. Well, every heart beats true for the red and the blue as we sing this song to you.